Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
It's a lovely day out, morning out, a little chilly, but spring's on the way. We've got some blossoms, some crocuses starting in our yards. I'm sure Sam and Dee are seeing all kinds of life in their property. Yeah. But welcome to the Unitarian Universalist Community Church of Hendricks County. I'm a member of your board, Jeff Haverly. Sunday is that day when we gather together to deepen our spirituality and support each other in our free and responsible search for truth and meaning in our lives. If you are a visitor, we're delighted you are here. And if you are interested in receiving further information, please fill out a visitor's card that can be found on either end of the sanctuary here and on a table, blue card. And then just fill it out and put it in the collection plate. That would be great. After the service, please stay with us. We would love to get to know you. We have a coffee hour downstairs. Whatever your faith, whatever your heritage, today you are a part of our religious community. To keep up to date with church happenings, we have a newsletter. It came out, Thursday, Friday? It was great. A lot of good stuff in there. I don't know how she does it all. Gets it. In the spirit of, a few announcements. Let's see if I have anything else. Yes, I do. And in your order of service, you can see that March 17th, next Sunday, we have a town hall service where we'll provide the state of the church and also solicit your ideas and thoughts on what we should do for the next year. March 24th, we have Lisa Johnson speaking on Indiana criminal law, the good, the bad, and the ugly. And then March 31st, we have Deborah Brown, Total Eclipse of the Sun, how to understand, enjoy, and prepare for an event of a lifetime. And we have a climate action team meeting next Saturday at the Haverly House. And we're going to start preparing for a service on April 31st, Earth Day. I think it's 31st, somewhere around there. And we're going to have ask the whole climate action team to help prepare that service. And pledges, if you haven't turned in your pledge, we need it now. I have to prepare the budget for next year, which has to go out on the 28th of this month, out in preparation for our annual meeting and at the end of April. So these things have to happen, and I need to know how generous all our members are, and I'll start making calls. That's the usual process. But yes, help us out. Help us know what we can do next year. Any other announcements from anyone?
Next Sunday with the town hall, there'll be a pigeon lunch afterwards. If you want to join us, if you'd like to bring a dish to share, by all means do. If not, still come down and grab a plate.
Sounds good. If anybody needs name tags, see me, let me know. And in the spirit of fellowship and community, please take a moment to greet those around you.
Thank you, Sam, for sharing that for our prelude today. What is my why? And I appreciate having the words on the screen because I did want to capture all of the things that he was saying. So very much appreciated there. At this point, we'd like to light our chalice. Our chalice lighting today is a short one, and it is taken from a book that we look at frequently in my house called Unitarian Universalism is a really long name. It is. I can recall when my children were young and trying to talk about where we're going and what we were doing, and UU is a lot easier for a 4-year-old to say than Unitarian Universalism. UU is a lot easier for a 40-year-old to say than Unitarian Universalism. It is a long name for who we are and what we do. And so if you've not seen it before, this is a book done by the UUA that explains some of the big questions about Unitarian Universalism. Not all of the big questions, but a handful, like who we are, what we believe, what our religious symbols are, do we pray, how do we celebrate? The kind of questions that children might want to know. And there's an example chalice lighting in here when it talks about the chalice, and this is that chalice lighting. We light this chalice to celebrate Unitarian Universalism. This is the church of the open mind, of the helping hands, and of the loving heart. If you would like to join me in the affirmation of our covenant, you are invited to do so. Unitarian Universalism is a diverse and inclusive faith tradition. Like many others, our congregation comes together around a common covenant, the words of which are in your bulletin if you would like to participate. We proudly carry the flame of religious freedom. We respect the interdependent web of all existence of which we are a part. We encourage each other to spiritual growth that makes for peace, ethical living, and community service. This is our covenant. Similar to last time comes from how the UUA's principles and purposes were shaped and how they've shaped Unitarian Universalism. As a reminder, this is an article that was written in 2000, so it's already about 25 years old now, as we go and the years go. But this was written right on the cusp of the new century. Though the principles and purposes have served us well since 1985, Jones, one of the authors there, is not suggesting that his committee produced a statement for the ages. After 15 years, he says, we should not be surprised at some restiveness. On the one hand, some of us aren't easy with what we see as a kind of creeping creedalism in the way we use the principles. On the other, there is a perception of incompleteness with important, arguably necessary, empowering assumptions about cosmic reality and our particular place in it that the principles and purposes have left unsaid. Still others, he said, are dissatisfied with what they see as an excessive emphasis on the individual, so that the creative nature of community and interdependence are only tardily and inadequately acknowledged. The commitment to a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, as the fourth principle puts it, carries the seeds of its own obsolescence. Just consider, well into the 20th century, our Unitarian predecessors used to proclaim and teach their children that we believe in, I need you to hear the capital letters at the start of every word here because it's important, the fatherhood of God, the brotherhood of man, the leadership of Jesus, salvation through character, and the progress of mankind onward and upward forever. That sounds very early 20th century language. Quite apart from the fact that we do not tend to use so many capital letters now, we would today have difficulty saying these words without embarrassment and a little bit of sickness. Yet the people who did say them were just as intelligent, as in tune with their times, and as committed to reason and free thinking as we are now. In 2020, when everyone presumably will have perfect vision, our current principles and purposes may also be perceived to have inadequacies that demand radical rewriting. And therein lies our genius. It is a process that is rightly called renewal or regeneration. And that is what has not changed, and let us hope will remain unchanged 20 or even 100 years from now. I like to call attention to the fact that he thought that in 2020, everyone would presumably have perfect vision. As part of the non-perfect vision club, and there's several of us in the room, we do not. However, I also think it interesting that he called into place that he knew that the words that were written in 1985 would not be sufficient in 2020 for the movement of Unitarian Universalism, though he did not at that time know which words would be sufficient. And he looked to those who would be coming to help us figure that out. I will continue to pull from this article as we go through our four sessions that we are discussing the updates to Article 2, mostly because there's a lot within that article that really helps break down the core of the movement previously to update and revise much of Article 2 that is still true and at the heart of the movement today to update and revise Article 2. So bear with me as we jump back to 2000 and then back to 2024 a few times throughout our four sessions together. At this time, to help us get into the mindset of our conversation today, we are going to do our all sing. Thank you, Sam and Deb. Well, if I was the only dreamer, or if you were the only dreamer, we would not be here today to have a conversation. We would not have a Unitarian Universalist congregation that exists in Danville, Indiana, of all places. And we would not have the Unitarian Universalist Association of North America that helps serve and is part of our conversation, really the crux of why we're having our conversation today. As I jump into our discussion today, I would like to express gratitude first and foremost to Reverend Dr. Cynthia Landrum from First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton. In a moment, I'm going to be turning on some slides that they made for their congregation, which were very good and helpful as I was looking through this, and so good and helpful that when they put them out there to all of you UUism and said, here, you want to use them, I said yes, and I'm going to use them exactly as is, as well as to the UU Wellspring for their congregational discussion guides on Article 2. Many of the questions and thoughts that we are bringing forward in our four-part series come from inspiration by these two sources and then adapted to our congregation, which is exactly why they shared them out. So with that in mind, welcome now to the second of our four sessions exploring Article 2. As a reminder, each of these four sessions will focus on a different element of the proposed revision to Article 2. If you do not have a copy of the current Article 2 and the proposed revision, I have copies available right here, and I'll come and pass them out, or if you want to grab them from the front. It is the full thing. We're only talking about part of it today, but if you want the full copy, I have them here. The goal of these four sessions is not for us to rewrite Article 2. We're not proposing our own copy edits or debating why we think a specific word or clause would be better. All of that feedback has already been given, and the version that is put forward now is the version that will be voted on in June at General Assembly. The goal of our four sessions is also not to ensure that everybody here at UUCC agrees on these proposed revisions. If our goal is ever that everybody here at UUCC agrees on something, I think we have the wrong goal, because we're not going to, and we know that. So please don't enter into any of the conversation today seeking to convince someone that these revisions as they are completely right or completely wrong. Instead, our goal today is really to explore Article 2, to think about it, offer our thoughts to each other, ask questions of ourselves, ask questions of each other, even knowing we may not be able to answer those questions today. At the end of our four sessions exploring Article 2, my hope is that each of you will understand a little better the why, how, and what of the proposed Article 2 revisions, and that you may feel comfortable supporting the individuals in this congregation who will execute our part of the democratic process in voting on the revision at General Assembly in June. Also, as a reminder, as we begin, Article 2 is one of the C bylaws of the Unitarian Universalist Association that was initially agreed upon in 1961, and then, as a living tradition, edited through democratic proceedings at UUA's General Assembly several times over the years. If you would like more background on the history of Article 2, on the history of the bylaws, on the history of the Unitarian Universalist Association, on their process, and then on the movement that led to this current proposed revision, I would encourage you to explore some of the resources that are provided by UUA, to listen to our first exploratory session that we did together last month here at this congregation, or come talk to me or anybody else in the congregation who wants to talk about it after service today. I am going to go ahead and turn on our PowerPoint.
Direction that says open. And I'm going to make this
Hold it here, not there. I don't know how to switch the screens.
I think you just switched the screen share.
I did it. That's okay. I'm just going to make this as big as I can here, and we're going to go with that. All right.
Do you know how to switch it, Julian? Because I don't. I'm going to let Julian switch it while I tell you a little bit more about this. Before we begin, for it, does anybody want one of these copies of the full thing?
Excellent. I printed them for you just for today because I already have one at home. So I'll do it back. Okay. The first page front back is the current Article 2. The second and third page front and back is the proposed Article 2. And they should be labeled accordingly.
So in our first session, where we explored the potential changes to Article 2, we looked at covenant. In future sessions, we'll be looking at love, which is going to be one of the centralized core tenets reflected throughout all of the updates. And at our final session, we will be looking at the switch from principles to values. I am actually personally most excited about this session. I don't know that as many of you will be as me, but that's okay. So when we speak of Article 2, most of you use dive directly into the principles. In fact, in the current version of Article 2, the principles are the first section, the first word in the principles and purposes, and they are the first section. However, there is much more to Article 2 than solely the principles. Today we'll be focusing on the sections of purposes, inspirations, which is a new section that would be in the proposed new version, inclusion and freedom of belief. Woohoo! Thank you, Julian. These are the very important sections that come before and after the values and covenant. I mentioned last time that I would bring this and a couple of other resources this time because this has some great little arrows here where they have marked where the primary content has shifted. So the principles has shifted primarily to the values and covenant. There are elements of the principles that are reflected in other sections. This is just where the bulk of that content is reflected within the new organization of Article 2. So you'll see the principles are primarily in the values and covenant, purposes is moved up, sources moves to inspirations, inclusion, and freedom of belief kept the majority of that content within the same section because they felt that it was already adequately named. Yes? Yes and no. So UUA is the lead organization of which Unitarian Universalist congregations may be a member. We are a member, and you can be part of that. So it is also, I would say, the guiding force for Unitarian Universalism in the United States, by which I mean that, yes, independent congregations can adopt covenants, can make choices independent of UUA. However, in the way that UUA does push out movements across the state, or sorry, well, across the nation, all UU congregations will still be influenced by the work that UUA does, whether directly or indirectly. It will, how UUA does their work impacts the way any Unitarian Universalist congregation in the United States can do their work over the next few years. So, good clarification, though. I would like to start our conversation by considering the framing of Article 2, the bookends of the articles. In the proposed revision, it will start with the purposes. I think it's very, very important, and to your point there, Liz, to remember that Article 2 is a part of UUA's bylaws. That's what these come from. We do not have a Bible in Unitarian Universalism that we refer to for the core or the heart of what our beliefs are. We refer instead to the bylaws, which are a legal document. So first and foremost, bylaws are an organization's operating manual. For churches and religious organizations, they do also contain the heart of their work. To quote, bylaws are important in laying the groundwork for any organization. Although written in legal language to satisfy governmental requirements, Bylaws also tell the story of that organization. In this case, the story of UUA. They encapsulate the vision, hopes, and dreams of Unitarian Universalism in the United States, and are also a last resort in cases of disagreements on legal matters. They help UUA govern day-to-day functions, such as committees and board structures, as well as deal with the more infrequent situations, such as establishing districts across the United States. While there are only a few changes in the initial section, it worked, of the purposes. They reflect core tenets at the center of the proposed revision, centering Article 2 on love and addressing historic injustices, primarily connected to anti-racism. So the purpose is to say this is who UUA is and who it will be. So when I look at the reflections up here, just so that you guys note and understand some of the color coding that is here, what this congregation has done is taken words that are either completely unchanged or have minor changes, like a tense changed because of the sentence structure, and they have kept those as the black writing. Where it's a greenish blue, that is things that the intent of those words has remained the same and moved from one section to the other. There might have been some minor wordsmithing, but you can find that there's kind of a match between those words and what their meaning is. The red words that they've included are more new content introduced within this section. So a way of looking at how much is truly new within each section versus how much was contained within it previously, if that's helpful with the coloring up there. I know somebody was looking at it and like, why are these fonts different colors? That's the why. So when we look at the purposes, this helps to remind us that the bylaws are saying who UUA is, not who we are. And that's a very important distinction. I want to jump to the end, to the other bookend of this then, the freedom of belief. I told you this is my favorite discussion today because personally, I'm a huge fan of this section. To me, this is the single most important section of UUA's bylaws. And you will note in the current version, there's not a single principle in there, but that's okay. This is my favorite section of the bylaws. Yes, I have a favorite section of UUA's bylaws. If you would like to pick a favorite section of your own, you may. If you are sitting here going, oh my gosh, I can't believe people have favorite sections of bylaws, that's okay, we all got our jam. Mine happens to be bylaws, I'm good with that. So, why is this my favorite section? Because at the end of Article 2, this is what UUA says. This is where they say, we aren't sure we have this right. They go further to even say, actually, not only are we not sure we have this right, we are so sure we don't have this right. That it is central to Unitarian Universalism as we support it, that we respect your right to get it right for yourself. The only thing you can't do, either as an individual or as a congregation, is require that others adhere to your specific belief. We cannot create a creed that others must agree with. Within that broad open space, though, outside of a creed, lies freedom of belief. This is my favorite section because of how unique and how powerfully humble this section is. If the purposes at the beginning of the articles say, UUA, this is us, this is who we are and who we will believe, the freedom of belief at the end says, UUA is not you, and you do not have to be UUA. That is very unique within the world of religion. To frame out the articles, to frame out the values and the inspirations and the inclusion with a defining point of who UUA will be, and to end with the freedom of belief that congregations and individuals may choose their own so long as it doesn't do a creed. This section is where I believe that most other religions would say, you may choose your own as long as you don't disagree with us. UUA doesn't do that. We have the freedom of belief to disagree with anything that they put out there, so long as we are not forcing others to believe it. So you can see a little bit why that might be my favorite section. I'm a firm believer in the freedom of belief, so firm a believer that I actually do agree with them having an agreement to have freedom of belief. Because it's in my notes here, I will say again, in the world of religions, it is so unique and so powerful in the humility that is included within this. I know last time when I introduced the articles, I spoke for a lot longer than I said I would for any of the other times, so we're going to get right into discussion now today. Keeping in mind those bookends, that purpose and freedom of belief, I'd like you to find a partner to discuss with. With your partner, we're going to discuss our first question. And the questions today, based on some feedback I got last time, thank you, are in your order of service. So I don't have to remember them, you don't have to remember them, and if you want to write, you've got a whole page, front and back, make some notes. Our first question for discussion today, are your own beliefs protected within the proposed revision to Article 2? How and why does this matter? I'm going to leave this up with the freedom of belief. On the right side, you can see is the proposed one. For those who are looking at where the principles are reflected within the new proposed revision, fifth principle gets baked into the freedom of belief within here. So the wording of the fifth principle is still reflected, even though it's not called out specifically as a principle. That's where it shifted to. So find a buddy. We'll take a few minutes and discuss. Are your own beliefs protected within this proposed revision? How and why does this matter? That if left to its own devices to end, would probably go till about midnight tonight. We would find other friends and we would wonder, but we could keep talking. I'm also going to go ahead and make a plug to say you may continue this conversation at any point in time you wish with anybody that you're currently talking to or a new friend as you would like to outside of today as well, and I hope that you do. For this next part of our discussion, I want to consider the inspirations. A new section, new title, Inspirations, that was pulled from the sources previously subtitled under the principles. The proposed change can be seen here. And when some look at it, let me clarify for this one. Ooh, I think I can use this. Do I have, does this point? Ooh, it does point, but you can't really see it very well in here. There it is. All of this reddish orange that is on the left here in the current one, it gets encompassed in these four words right here on the right-hand side. So they take this big list over here and they put it in these four words, sacred and secular understandings, and then the bluish part is new here underneath it on the right. So this proposed change here can be seen on a surface level as editing, simply shifting from a growing bullet list, as you see on the left, to a concise sacred and secular understandings on the right, taking all of the things that are listed there and putting them under those four words. However, this edit is also an intentional strategy within UUA to move away from some of the whataboutism approach that they feel was beginning to happen within that list, where the response to a difficult question is to raise a different issue. So if this one's included, what about this one? Well, what about this one? Well, what about this one? If you remember from the history of Article 2 shared in the first session, or just from your own knowledge of the history of UUA and Unitarian Universalism, these sources were created in the merger of two radical Christian groups, and you can see that reflected, both in the choice of sources that they included and did not include originally. Remember, that last one was not on there originally. And the specific language. I know in our own writings that we have for our congregation, you don't find the words evil, God, or idolatries very often. And they're not as commonly reflected in UU language today as compared to some Christian language, which was incorporated at the beginning here. That final bullet on the list, too, of the Earth-centered traditions was added in 1991 by UUA in response to the growing movement of indigenous, earth-based, and pagan beliefs within UU congregations. The edits proposed summarize, rather than list, intentionally calling us to focus on the context and the use of sources, both those that are on that list and those that may not be on that list. You'll see the intention on the use of sources reflected in the new blue language there. And it is the idea to concentrate on the context and use of sources more so than trying to identify if in the bullets on the left there is something incomplete or incorrect. So the idea here is to shift away from listing specific sources and instead say, use the sources, secular and sacred, that make sense to you so long as you are understanding them within the context they were given and using them for purposes that match our beliefs. If you would like to choose a new partner for your second conversation, you can. If you'd like to stay with your same partner, you can. but we're going to choose somebody for our second discussion question here. What inspirations inform your faith? Do you feel they are reflected in the new proposed section? And when you look on the right, is there anything still missing from the new proposed section? Please discuss. I find interesting that this section has very few edits overall, especially compared to some of the other sections. You're going to notice black on the left, black on the right, almost exactly all of the same text that's in both sections. However, the specific edits that are here are important to our understanding of the larger movement, which has led to the current recommendations to revise Article 2. As mentioned in our first session, this proposed revision was brought together through multiple separate movements to address racial inequity and combat white supremacy within the United States and within the UUA, including the movement to adopt the Eighth Principle, commonly referred to by many as the call to create beloved community. The movements came from within Unitarian Universalism in the United States, including grassroots efforts in local UU congregations, coordinated and target action by UU ministers and lay leaders, and efforts from both within and separate from UUA itself. So you'll note the two changes here. Firstly, the who share our values. So we strive to be an association of congregations that truly welcome all persons who share our values. A very critical four words to add to that. The clause adds a difference in meaning to who we welcome. It draws a distinction, a line, marked, clearly cut, for how welcoming we can be. This is a clarification that is crucial in a time where our nation is taking several steps backwards in legislation and policy to uphold separate but equal principles that many people gave their lives to protect already and to get instituted. Principles that are making decisions around how individuals within our nation can live, particularly principles around race and poverty, and attacking the rights of women and transgender individuals. These four words, who share our values, place a limit on where our welcome can extend. Should also note that the specification in the final sentence of especially those with historically marginalized identities is a call to attention and action on the true struggles of individuals to participate in a society that is very often white-centered, male-centered, hetero-centered, and often Judeo-Christian-centered, even if that part is not said out loud. And it is a drawing to the idea of the perceptions and the struggles of individuals who live within a United States where they might not be allowed to participate as actively as they should be by merit of who they are. Although there are only minor changes or revisions within this section, they are very powerful in how we define what inclusion is within UUA and how UUA purports to approach inclusivity across the congregations they serve. For our final discussion question today, I'd like you to consider, how does inclusion, as written here on the right in the proposed one, allow for a broader sense of belonging? And this is where it becomes personal, because I tweaked this question. It originally said a broader sense of belonging within our congregations and UUA. And I'm going to be fair, I like UUA. I care more about what's going on in these four walls, though, than I do necessarily what's going on within the walls in which they are having their conversations. So my question would be, how does inclusion, as written here on the right, allow for a broader sense of belonging than what you see in our current congregation and our community here, within our church and within Hendricks County, that we act within? So I'll say that again. How does inclusion, as written here in this revision, allow us to consider what belonging means within our community as a church and our community here? Give you a couple minutes to discuss that one. I put the hard one last on purpose because I'm going to pass the mic after this one.
Yeah. those type, in their traditional marches, it's so I think our consideration has a problem with exclusion. I think it's excluded some of those ideas that we rail against in this person.
I'm going to draw us back together because I'd like to take a moment to pass the mic and get some feedback from all of you. I didn't pass the mic at each of these three things because, to be fair, these are also three shorter sections and they kind of all run into each other a little bit intentionally. But what I'd like to do is see if there is anybody that, based off of your conversations, individually feel there is something that should be shared with the group at large. And we'll take a couple people contributing, and then if we go over our time today as we do the rest of our service, I'm okay with that. So who would like to share something that they want to raise up to the entire group? First hand.
I think when you look at that section that says who share our values, it causes us not to just sort of accept certain things about Unitarianism in theory, but also sort of pushes us about the way that we behave, and also kind of check our attitudes a bit when we think about why we're here and what we're doing and who gets to be a member and who doesn't. As you know, you go to a lot of other churches that are based on a long list of rules and it's very strict. And if you've developed a lot of attachments to people there, you don't want to get kicked out of the club. And so you may fall in line whether you believe in what you're being told or not, and you just may stay silent about it. Whereas here, with freedom of belief, it's easy, because we're humans, to tend to gravitate towards people who are like us, right? And to fall back into some of those same sorts of behaviors that were really exemplified by churches we may have come from. And so by saying that, we want to welcome all people who share our values. These might be people who are very vastly different from ourselves, people who believe in things that we don't believe in, people who have lifestyles that we don't have, people whose just attitudes about life in general are very different from our own. But if they share our values, then they're welcome to be here. And so I think it causes us to take a good look at how we interact with each other and to actually exemplify that welcoming attitude as opposed to just saying it, you know, I mean, or just going, oh yeah, okay, mm-hmm, I gotta be accepting. Well, you know, it, when we think about who gets to be in the club, it really causes us to kind of, I think, check ourselves about how we gravitate towards or away from some members of our own congregation, and to continue to think about that.
It's kind of like, it's a proposed inclusion, but what about, how do we justify the exclusion of those who do not share our values?
No, go ahead. Okay. So, The inclusion of who share our values, it does imply not necessarily our beliefs. And I know we don't necessarily have specific beliefs, but it could be interpreted that way. And I don't know. A little more specificity. It doesn't feel right. Yeah. Anyway. A little more specificity would be good in that situation, especially in the cases of churches that are, or UU congregations that have gotten to a majority of one sort of faith and have started to move away from the UU ideals. No, I had something else, but I've forgotten. Anyway, that's it.
And actually, will you pass that way to Kate?
I'm not ready to pass the mic in this section.
Just to include another aspect of our discussion that we had was kind of the counter to that, where, you know, if you have people that are, you know, really on the extreme of being disrespectful to marginalized folks, you know, different identities, and just make it a really uncomfortable space, and, you know, don't believe in that inclusion, to what extent are we in charge of teaching our values and trying to convince them the other way? It was just a discussion question that we came up with.
Well, now you're going to hear from the south side of the building. We've been excluded up till this point. So
that was intentional.
I know it. I know it. To Julian's point, I agree. I think I agree with what he's saying, that by going to the word our shared values, when we had the seven principles, we had, that's almost like the Ten Commandments. You got something solid that you can point out to somebody. Well, what do you guys believe? Well, we don't all believe the same things, but these are the principles that we all agree on. And by going to this shared values thing, to me, it's more vague. And it's not something that you can hang your hat on as easily. The question of inclusivity, and we were just talking about this, that last line, especially those with historically marginalized identities. Well, here in rural Hendricks County, in this church, we haven't had, other than the LGBT community, we haven't had many opportunities to demonstrate our inclusivity to those folks, to other people. But I think where we have failed in the past is not with the marginalized identities, but rather with the fundamentalist Christians who are very much not marginalized. But we have been, I think we've been guilty of excluding some of the, I know for a fact there are some Christian former members who left here because they felt that their views could not be shared here publicly.
I'm going to add, because the mic went back to my hands, and then I'll keep passing it. To your point about the principles, that's going to come up a little bit more as we dive into the principles, but the reading that I had earlier today that talked about the principles and purposes approaching that creed, there is a growing movement that's feeling like that within UUs to say, if we're treating these like they're the Ten Commandments, have we actually created a creed? We're just not calling it a creed. And so I have some unease with the shifts away from the very specifics, because you can get to the specifics. Thou shalt not kill, real specific, you know, in what it's saying. When you get into the more vague concepts, it's a little bit harder, and you have to work a little bit harder to get there. And that's, to me, in some of the changes that we've seen reflected today, makes me think I'm going to have to work harder. I might be okay with that, but I'm not sure yet. I'm going to go D, straight line back, and then over.
Comes to my mind that other religions are going to look at this and have their own interpretation of it. Values to us and values to someone else are not the same.
I will clarify here, sorry, because I did not make that clear. When they say values here, they're specifically talking about the six new values included with it.
Okay.
So they do have specifically named, but then they are named such things as generosity, and there is an explanation with it, but there's still a lot of red. So
okay.
A little bit more clear than just values, still really vague.
Mm-hmm.
At the risk of getting in trouble quoting Christianity like Sam was talking about, there was an interesting meme on I saw on Facebook that talked about how in Jesus' Sermon on the Mount, all he talked about was how we behave. And when you get to the Nicene Creed 300 years later, all it talks about is what you believe. And that is the difference between the principles and a creed. A creed tells you what to believe, the principles tell you how to behave. So I think that's an important point.
And just to cap on what Annie was saying, I just wanted to say that, you know, if we're all decent, respectful human beings, and we really kind of keep after ourselves to be that, then maybe vagueness can work, you know? Because we're all kind of, you know, like I said before, checking ourselves about how we express ourselves, how we behave, as opposed to being so caught up in a list of rules, a list of values, a list. And, you know, and it's great to have certainty, and it's great to, it gives us a sense of stability, et cetera, and it's easy. It's easy. Just follow the rules. But when we have to be good and decent and respectful and welcoming, that's not so easy, especially not always knowing how to approach certain individuals.
Back to the sell side.
I wanted to respond to or build on a couple things that Sam said. The first thing I wanted to say was I wanted to point out that LGBT is not the only historically excluded community that we have represented here. There are a whole lot of women here, and in other faiths, women are not in the leadership roles that we see here. So I just wanted to remind us of that, because I feel like that's a huge deal. And the second thing I wanted to say was, Sam mentioned that there have been Christian people who didn't feel welcome here and have left. And I totally get that. While I don't self-identify necessarily as Christian, I do self-identify as Catholic. And sometimes I say, depending on the circumstances, I might say that I am ethnically Catholic. Maybe no one else uses that, but I do. And I do hear Catholicism and adherence of traditional Catholicism spoken about here in really unkind and rather derisive terms. And that's not cool. And I think if the same people who spoke of Catholicism and Catholics spoke of Jews or Muslims that way, they would be taken to task here. But when it's Catholicism, it seems to be okay. That's all.
All right. I'm going to keep the mic, but not end the conversation. Would definitely invite everybody to continue talking about these proposed changes, what they mean for UUA, and what they mean for us. I would like to thank you for participating today in our conversation, and I do look forward to continuing it. We have two more sessions that we will do for our second Sundays that will look at love and how it is centered within the new Article 2 and why it is centered within the new Article 2. The proposed new Article 2. It's not agreed upon yet. As well as then looking at the shift from the principles over to the values. And that is the final discussion, which I figure will have the most discussion from this group, and that's why we're leading up to it. At this time, we are going to move into the last part of our service today. We are going to go ahead and do our offering, as well as then move into our joys and concerns. So for our offering, we know financial contributions to this congregation come from sacrifice and hard work, and we are so grateful for this and commit together to ensure the funds we gather collectively do a greater good for ourselves and our world than they could have done alone. If you would consider giving, you can use the QR code on the back of your bulletin, as well as each month our congregation chooses a local nonprofit to support with our offering. This month, our nonprofit is Misty Eyes Animal Center, who is seeking to end euthanasia and to help with understanding of caring for pets within our community. Any cash offerings that are collected in the plates at the back or the side of the sanctuary will be given. If you give a check offering, please note if it is for the church or the nonprofit. In addition, if you would like to add to our food collection, I saw the bin here somewhere, and it's somewhere in these two rooms. I don't remember where I saw it this morning, but we will collect those as you are able. Please consider bringing in non-perishable items and placing them in that bin. At this time, Sam and Deb are going to do our offertory song, One Day.
Sometimes I lay under the moon and thank God I'm breathing. Then I pray don't take me soon, 'cause I am here for a reason. Sometimes in my tears I drown, but I never let it get me down. So when negativity surrounds, I know someday it'll all turn around. Because all my life I've been waiting for, I've been praying for the people to say that we don't wanna fight no more. There'll be no more wars, and our children can play. One day,
one day,
one day,
one day,
one day,
one day,
one day.
One day,
one day,
one day this all will change. Treat people the same. Stop all the violence. Down with the hate. One day we'll all be free and proud to be under the same sun, singing songs of freedom. One day,
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 one day.
One day,
one day,
one day,
ooh, one day,
one day,
one day,
one day.
It was beautiful. Thank you, Sam and Deb. In our community, we care about the significant challenges, successes, and milestones that impact each other's lives. At this point, we will do our joys and concerns. And I invite you to please come forward if you would. And then you flip it over, and it's on the back of the other, of that same piece. And if you lose your place, just keep going joyfully, and you'll pick back up, I'm sure.
When you're down and troubled, and you need a helping hand, and nothing, oh, nothing is going right. Close your eyes and think of me, and soon I will be there to brighten up even your darkest night. Just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come.
again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you got to do is call, and I'll be there. Yes, I will. You've got a friend. If the sky above you should turn dark and full of clouds, I'll be knocking upon your door. You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. Winter, spring, summer, or fall, all you got to do is call, and I'll be there. Yes, I will. Ain't it good to know you've got a friend? People can be so cold. They'll hurt you and desert you. Take your soul if you let them.
Oh yeah, but don't you let them.
You just call out my name, and you know wherever I am, I'll come running to see you again. To spring, summer, or fall, all you've got to do is call, and I'll be there. Yes, I will. You've got a friend. You've got a friend. Isn't it good to know you've got a friend? Isn't it good to know you? You've got a friend.
Oh, yeah.
You've got a friend.
Our closing words today. The work continues. Our time together is finished, but our work is not yet done. May our spirits be renewed and our purpose resolved as we meet the challenges of the week to come. The chalice flame is extinguished until once again ignited by the strength of our communion. Go now in peace. And if this works, we do have a postlude coming.